Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast brought to you by Tacticam. Tacticam is by far the easiest way to begin filming your hunts. Whether it's the budget-friendly Solo or the 4K 5.0, Tacticam has something for everyone. Check them out at Tacticam.com. This year we're also working with Spartan Forge. Spartan Forge stands at the nexus of machine learning and white-tailed deer hunting to deliver truly intuitive and science-based products to save the hunter time spent scouting, planning, and executing their hunts. You can find them at SpartanForge.ai. And basically what this is artificial intelligence for the deer woods. The farmer's almanac on steroids with data, billions of data points to back it up. Those data points are ever growing by pro staff in the field like Garrett Prawl, Taylor Chamberlain, Andy May, as well as car deer studies, social media, collar deer studies all over the region from Florida, Maine, all the way out into the Midwest and Iowa. 60 to 75% accurate. Spartan Forge is taking all this information and giving you the best odds to get on those deer. So you can check them out at SpartanForge.com. You can use code BOWHUNTER to get 25% off. And as there's more data points, as there's more things, as the app is being built and moved over to your mobile devices, that causes more storage. More storage costs more money. So the sooner you get locked in at your price, that price will stay for as long as you are a patron of Spartan Forge. So again, Spartan Forge, check them out, SpartanForge.ai, super cool stuff. No new Patreons in the last couple weeks, so just an update on Patreon. Patreon is a crowdfunding for creators. It helps us to do things like we're doing here at the Total Archery Challenge, putting on our cookout. You know, we're trying to meet up with as many people. We're headed up there. Going to be doing the same thing at the Total Archery Challenge in Michigan. Helps us to buy gear, things to do reviews on, things to give away. You know, we're constantly trying to give back. For all of you that did order shirts, I just picked up all the shirts today, so your orders will be in. We do have some extra shirts. That's an option for one of the benefits of becoming a Patreon also. But basically, like I said, it's just a donation to the show to help us, you know, pay for our time, all the time away from family, all this other stuff. Starts out at like 17 cents a day. I mean, 17 cents, you throw that away, right? You know, that really, really does help us out. And to give back, we have giveaways from our partners, you know, things where the companies that we're working with want to give back. I'll be doing the giveaway for, this last quarter. That one will be coming up on Monday, so we'll go live on Instagram on Monday and knock out those giveaways for you. This quarter, Tacticam is giving away a fisheye package, and so their fisheyes are super cool. It's, you know, submersible Tacticam. Doesn't take any sort of different case. Everything's waterproof, and it's wireless. It has loop mode. And honestly, I think this is going to be the Tacticam solo killer. It's right about the same price point, but it has a wide option. So prior to this, you could have that 4K wide. That was your only option for a wireless wide-angle camera. All the other Tacticams have some form of zoom. So for that true POV view or anything like that, it just wasn't an option. And the solo, you can turn it on with a Wi-Fi with your phone, but these Tacticam, the fisheyes also use the remote. So these are super cool. Tacticam's giving away a fisheye package this quarter. We have purchased, or we've got our order in. So with all this hunting stuff, you know how all that goes. But we've got our order in from one of Dan Infault's beast stands. So we're going to be giving away one of those. It's like a $625 stand. So we're just waiting on that, and we'll be giving that away this time as well. Base map. So we love base map over here. I mean, just the value alone is incredible. You know, $30 for the entire country for the entire year, which on most of the other ones, that'll only get you one state. And the amount of layers, all of those different things over the summer, they've got lakes and rivers, depths, you know, on most of the inland lakes. We're here in Michigan, so I haven't been on a lake yet where it didn't give me the depth. And I think that's incredibly valuable. And then if you use code Chronicles, you got to go online to basemap.com. You can save 20% on that, so it ends up being $24 a month, or excuse me, $24 for the entire year. That's $2 a month. But Basemap gives away one of their, you know, nationwide pro packages. And one of the things that we haven't talked about that much is they do weekly giveaways as well. So you can go on to Basemap, even on the free version, and learn how to use the map, get familiar with the features of it, and have a chance to win, you know, incredible prizes, like, you know, a couple $1,000 worth of prizes every week, some weeks. So you should definitely check it out. If you haven't even looked at Basemap, definitely check them out. Spartan Forge, they're giving away a year subscription. And like I say, their app is due out in July, end of August. But they're, you know, continually improving. So, that's getting better every month, every week. Some great things going on over there. And both Basemap and Spartan Forge are giving away swag packs, so hat, shirt, that whole thing. And then Zinger Fletches. So Zinger Fletchings, those guys have reached out to us. I've got some of their older Fletchings, and actually the end of this week, April 8th, they're releasing their new Fletchings. I've already got some of those. And if you've seen the original Zinger Fletches, they're 3D printed. They're a little bit stiffer. These are just like a normal Fletch, flexible like you would expect. But, you know, for guys that aren't into building their arrows, or, you know, for a trip that you want to have some extra, you know, if you mess up some Fletchings or, you know, something happens, as inevitably it does, you can just throw a couple of those on there. They're just compression fit for your arrows, and, you know, really, really cool product. And they're a different shape to be a little bit quieter. So they're giving away some of those as well. And you can check all of that out at patreon.com/Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. If you want to be a part of that, we've got a, Marco Polo group that we set up for our Patreons, and it's really cool. I think I've realized that it's more like a the old school hunting forum. So somebody asks a question, and then without just the way that social media goes, everybody's a hero and they know everything. You know, it's a way to actually get information amongst a good group of people that are all have the same motive, and they're not, it's not a pissing contest. So that's one of the cooler things that have come out of our Patreon, is building that community. So like I say, you know, if you guys can help out, that would be great. You can go to the website, Bowhunter Chronicles Podcast, and click on the Patreon tab on Instagram right up at the top underneath our bow giveaway. So we are giving away a bow. We're giving away a Bowtech Carbon Zion that's coming right out of our own pockets. You know, obviously with help from the Patreons, you know, like I said, that funds this show. So, we're getting that bow from Johnson's Great Outdoors. Mitch is helping us out on the pricing of that. It's got a HHA Tetra sight on it. Chris over at HHA donated one of the single pin high-end sights. I mean, it's the one that he recommended. It's a great sight, as well as the rest. And we're still working out a deal for some stabilizers on it. I mean, this bow is going to be incredibly set up. You know, over $1,000 worth of money, you know, spent on this bow. And all you got to do is sign up to win on our Instagram. You just go to the top, click on the link, sign up. That's it. You don't have to be a Patreon. You don't have to do anything. So we're giving that away to say thank you for everything that, you know, for supporting the show, just for listening. So, but this week's podcast is TJ Jordan. TJ is, I believe he's killed 26 or 27 states. He's actually hunting out west right now on spring break. He's taking his 8-year-old son out there. He was chasing the Super Slam, but now that he's got a kid that's hunting, he's focused more on getting his kid to kill some turkeys. But he is a champion friction caller. He calls for Matt Van Sice. And he has his own company, Dirt Nap Game Calls. And we talk about turkey tactics, calling, and maybe a little bit of, you know, lots of things that I wasn't aware of or things that I didn't do in my calling. So I think you guys are really going to enjoy this podcast. And as always, you know, thank you for listening. Tell somebody about the show. Tell them that we suck and you got to listen to these guys because they don't know what they're talking about. Or maybe there's something that you've got out of the episode that you say, hey, this might help you because you're a terrible turkey caller. You know, all of those, you know, things that we do with our friends when we're trying to get them to listen to something. But we really do appreciate everybody. Thank you for listening. Enjoy the episode. All right, everybody, Adam and John back with another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. Shifting gears a little bit as we move towards turkey season, we're going to talk a little bit about turkey calling. We didn't bring on Uncle Frank because he can get a little sideways here and there. So, but we do have a guest on here, TJ Jordan, and we'll let TJ kind of introduce himself because real humble guy and doesn't, you know, he's got a company and all this stuff, doesn't want to talk about that, wants to talk about turkey hunting, and we want to know how to call turkeys. So how are you doing tonight, TJ?
Well, I'm doing great. Thanks, Adam and John, for having me on. I appreciate it.
And so this is his first podcast, so we're going to try and, you know, make it as easy and seamless as possible. I told him, I said, if you like talking about hunting and talking about turkeys, this should be an easy podcast. So,
yes, sir.
So what's your story? How did you get into, like hunting and, you know, where are you located? You know, all of that fun stuff.
Yeah. So I'm located, in upstate New York. I mean, you know, not to be associated with New York City, but I'm about 30 minutes from the Adirondack Mountains. So I'm pretty, you know, pretty hilly country, you know, mountainous terrain, nothing crazy, but, you know, it's beautiful country. I mean, it's upstate New York's finest. You know, I'm 39 years old now. I'm a sixth grade math teacher. And I guess I got into hunting when I was 12 years old. My dad took me out my first turkey hunt, my brother and I, and, it was just, you know, we just went out in the woods and Dad said, I'll sit down here with your brother and you go up on there and see if there's any turkeys. And I couldn't believe it, man. I mean, it was the fall time of the year and there was a flock of about 40 turkeys, 40 hen turkeys, hens and mixed flock of hens and jakes. And they were roosted right above me. And I had a New England Firearms 20 gauge with probably like a, you know, like clay target size shot, 7.5 or something that you shouldn't have at 12 years old. And I remember I had to get on my knees and crawl to this long grass to get a shot at these turkeys, and I shot. This turkey rolled over, got up and flew away, and I was just, from that point on, I've been hooked. My dad's not a hunter. He's a Vietnam veteran, so he's not a big time hunter, but he definitely introduced me to the outdoors. And you know, I take him out, you know, every spring, and he goes on a turkey hunt, and we can't walk very far. It's probably one of my toughest hunts of the year, but it's definitely my most enjoyable. So I got my start, you know, with my dad getting me turkey hunting. And then from there, it's kind of been, you know, generation at 39 years old, it's been books and DVDs and reading things. I mean, YouTube wasn't a thing when I was really coming through the turkey world. So it's kind of like, you know, the best lessons, the failures, and all the failures you kind of put together and string it all together. So I've kind of been a homemade turkey hunter, I would call it.
So do you hunt any other species or just turkeys?
I do, John. I hunt deer. I'm an avid whitetail deer hunter. I love deer hunting. I actually hunt deer on some of the finest property in Washington County. My cousin has a quality deer management, and it's a managed piece, and it's phenomenal hunting. I mean, I can't, you know, it's unbelievable. So I hunt deer, I hunt coyotes. I enjoy waterfall hunting too. I've really just gotten into the last couple years of the predator thing, just to give me something to do through the winter months. But that's incredibly hard in New York. I mean, there's not a ton of predators, and it's really hard to call them in. And I'm using night vision and things of that nature, but yeah, so I hunt almost anything and everything that I can try, but I am an avid deer, turkey, and I would say predator hunter.
Awesome.
So what's the turkey population or whatever like in New York? I don't think of that as a turkey state. And so like John here, like I didn't grow up turkey hunting. John is my wife's cousin. Only since I've been in this family have I ever turkey hunted. But like John, like what was the turkey climate like when you were growing up? Because Michigan didn't have a season for a long time.
Right. So it started out, I was in my teens, and you know, Uncle Frank, my dad, they turkey hunt. But back then it was, you're lucky to get a tag. I mean, there was very few turkeys, and we had to go north of here. Like there was no turkeys around our house and stuff like that. So we had to go up north, put in for the draw. And, you know, I think it was maybe every other year, every 2 years, we'd get a tag, you know, like someone in the group would get a tag every year, but not all of us. And if we did, it was like a real, you know, we lucked out, but they're just,
you won the lottery.
Yeah, exactly. But, there wasn't a lot of people that, you know, it was just kind of like our own little niche. Like there wasn't a lot of people that are turkey hunting, but now it's changed. I mean, now there's, holy crap, there's flocks everywhere. One of our good friends just hit a flock of turkeys with her car. With her boy fiance's car, and totaled out his Audi.
You know what's funny is my wife just got her car repaired because she hit a turkey, and I told her that last December, but we just got it repaired now. But she hit a turkey on the way home from work, and I was like, "That's paying us back for all the turkeys that I've shot."
Some karma.
So, yeah, it's definitely some karma.
Maybe it's you haven't killed enough. You know, you got to just knock that.
That's it. That could be it. You can never kill enough of them. Right.
Yeah. So, what's the turkey hunting like in New York? Because, like I said, I don't really think of that as like a turkey hunting destination.
Yeah, you know, I would say you're right. I mean, Michigan is definitely a well managed state for turkey hunting. You guys have seemed to do everything, you know, population wise. That's incredibly, you know, awesome. New York State, you know, it's so big and so vast and just so different. Like, you know, like where I live, it's, you know, hilly terrain, mountainous, you know, type of stuff as you go further north. And then in the western part, it's more flat land, you know, it's more like Midwest hunting. But believe it or not, you know, it depends on where you are in New York. So like central New York, parts of central New York, parts of like, you know, far eastern New York, northern New York up near Plattsburgh and those areas, downstate, those areas are just absolutely booming with turkey numbers. You can shoot two turkeys in the spring, two males in the spring, and then you can shoot one female in the fall. Now they changed that regulation. It used to be two and two. So it's booming, but there are parts of New York State that where the population is really hurting. You know, they say that some parts out in western New York State are the population density is really affected. I mean, it's really low. I have not seen that in my area. Overall it's an incredible state to turkey hunt. You know, a non-resident tag is just over $100. I mean, it might be $125 to kill two turkeys, and you can hunt spring and fall. So it's a pretty good place to draw a tag and get a tag in a turkey hunt.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about calling. So we've got you on here to talk about calling. So why would you say that is?
Yeah. So, you know, I am a turkey hunter. I am second nature turkey caller. I guess what happened was I just started turkey calling, and I want to do something outside with turkeys other than just turkey season. I kind of want to extend the turkey brotherhood. So I went to a contest in Massachusetts, and obviously, you know, met some awesome people and really got my feet wet. Like, you know, I was ripping on a box call in my first contest. The guys were looking at me like, what is this guy doing? I mean, you know, this is a mouth call contest. And, you know, I think I was like the laughing stock, like the first contest. And it's really been relatively new for me. I'd probably say, you know, within the past 7 years, I've really started the calling contest world. So I jumped in as, you know, you can jump in at different levels. I jumped in as a hunter class, didn't do anything in my first contest, went to New York. And I actually won a hunter division. And once you win a division, you kind of have to move out of that division. So once you win a hunter class division, you would have to move into, you know, like an open division. So an open would mean mouth call or friction. Anything you want to bring to the table, you can call with. It's an open class, and that's where generally the best of the best will call in. Once you get to that class, there's really nowhere to go from there. You know, but everybody really starts in the hunter division. If you were just to get into it, you know what I mean? Then you would bounce your way up. But if you don't, you know, if you don't win those, you can stay in the hunter division and call there. But, you know, I've met some of my best buddies in turkey calling. You know, last year I qualified for Grand Nationals. I was going to go down and call on the big stage for friction calls, down in Nashville, Tennessee at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel, at the NWTF National Convention. COVID hit. It was actually the first year I qualified. My buddy Phil Solzano, we had a memorial turkey calling championship for him in Vermont. And I actually ended up winning that friction contest, which qualified me to call in Nashville at the big stage. So it's just something to do. I enjoy it. It keeps me fresh on my calls. You know, I really enjoy friction calls. To be dead honest with both of you, I sucked at mouth calling. So I said to myself, what am I going to do? Like, I go to the store and I buy a mouth call and I pick anyone off the shelf, and it just, none of them really work for me. So then I was like, all right, well, what's the only way to get good is just to buy my own press. I got to start making my own. I got to figure this stuff out. So I bought a jig. I bought a mouth call jig, and I bought some press, and I bought some latex and some frames. And I'm like, I'm going to start making some mouth calls and, you know, just talking to people. And I filled up garbage bags of mouth calls by just trial and error. Oh, not right. Didn't sound right. Throw it out. Too tight, too loose. You know, I take notes on everything. And then finally I got something to work, and I'm like, all right, well, maybe I should, you know, start a calling company and sell some of these things to pay for some of my bad habits. Like, you know, like turkey hunting, you know, traveling the country, buying turkey calls and all, you know, buying hunting stuff. So that's kind of where it really blended into it. you know, and from there, it was just about turkey, you know, calling and just being the best I can be. You know what I mean? Like, to me being okay was was all right, but I really wanted to be, you know, I really wanted to sound like a wild turkey, the best that I thought I could sound like a wild turkey, you know, not just, okay, that will kill a turkey. Like, I wanted to be a wild turkey. You know what I mean? Like, I want to make that turkey. When guys are saying that, you know, why aren't those birds gobbling? You know, I want to be the guy that makes that turkey gobble. Like, why did that turkey gobble to you? Why did he gobble that call? You know, what are you doing? So those are the reasons why I guess I really became passionate about sounds of the wild turkey.
I got to think, like, from this standpoint, and, like, John can probably back me up here, but, like, the first thing that's coming to my mind is your wife has to be, like, a saint because...
Or deaf. Because,
like...
Yeah. Well, Adam, I mean... You're right. I mean, it's not only that. It's just, it's a passion for me. Like, so I'm part of the NWTF. So it's like turkey, 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 turkey. For crying out loud, I have Rio Grande turkeys as pets in my backyard. So she's even opened up to the, you know, holy Christ, we got, you know, pet turkeys, you know, in our backyard. And it's only because I want to hear them 24/7. You know, when I want to hear a gobble, I grab a call, I go to the door, and I rip on it. And I listen to him gobble, and I hear the hen cut up and yelp and just all sorts of crazy stuff. So my wife, Marcy, she is an absolute saint. You know, I don't know how she deals with it. She listens to me play a turkey call every day of her existence. She hears me play something. But that's what we do. I mean, that's what, you know, diehard turkey hunters, that's what they do. They have a turkey call by them 24/7. And at some point in time, that turkey call is going to get played.
And you already answered my question. I was going to say, so, you know, how do you, you know, learn, how do you, you know, communicate with these turkeys? But obviously you just answered, said you got turkeys in your own backyard. So, I mean, obviously.
Yeah, and that's a thing. Like, you know, I mean, you know, Johnny, think about it. Like, everybody's like, how can I get better? How can I get better? You know, I used to record myself a lot, like, you know, just audio voice recording. I'd send them to, you know, the top turkey callers, you know, the country, like, you know, Matt Van Sice or, you know, Brett Ledoux or, you know, guys that know turkey when they hear turkey. And I would send my sound files to those guys. And obviously, you know, sometimes you get crickets, like, man, you're thinking, dang, that sucked. And then maybe you'll get, like, from Sadler McGraw, oh, that's better. You're getting it. You know what I mean? And then you listen to yourself and you're like, God, that is not, I wanted to sound like Jussie Martin when I rapped on that call, and that sounds like just absolute garbage. So then I was like, all right, you know what? If I get some turkeys, I can listen to their cadence and their tones and things of that nature that, you know, I'm hearing on some audio tapes that I play on the way to work because I have an hour commute every day. And, you know, just trying to be the most realistic that I can get, you know, because like I said, it is an absolute obsession. So that's what I really would try to do is just, you know, get people's feedback, listen to audio, try to be like a wild turkey,
so,
which is crazy.
So for a guy, like, you know, my deal here is like the world's worst bow hunter. I could probably legitimately be, actually, I would say that I'm not the world's worst elk caller because I've been watching the Hunt Wars and they just pulled these guys out of Alabama and stuff. And they're just, and I'm like, I'm better than that, man. I'm better than that. But, and I'm okay. I like when you talk friction calls, like I like a slate call. Like I've got a couple that I just go to, like box call. I hate the sound of it. I just, it clicks. Like when I don't have no technique. But we've got a lot of guys that are, you know, trying to learn turkey hunting, maybe didn't grow up turkey hunting or kind of moving towards it. So where should guys start out? Like when they're turkey calling, I mean, when guys ask you what to do, like, I mean, I didn't learn turkey hunting from my dad. So I think of my dad out there just with this box call, just wop, 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 wop.
I feel push button yelper.
Yeah. Yes, the old push button. Yeah, you attach it to your barrel of your gun. You got a little string, and you just yank on it.
Yep.
Honestly, Adam, what I try to tell guys, like, I mean, this podcast could go on for hours if we want to talk about this stuff. You know, I mean, this is stuff that I enjoy talking about the people. I just had a conversation. A guy reached out to me about this exact same question the other day. Listen, I want to get into turkey hunting. You know, I don't really have any private land. And what do I need? What do I do? How do I get into this? What do I have to do? So I guess you really need to figure out, you know, I guess what I would tell people is, no matter what you do, you're not gonna, to me, like a guy, you know, like, I think the biggest question I get is, what do I not do? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's anything you can do. I think if you call to a turkey, like, you know, guys are like, oh, did I overcall? Did I undercall? Could I have done this differently? I honestly think that, you know, sometimes, like, you know, it doesn't matter really what you do to that turkey. It's not going to screw up your hunt. It's going to be more of your setup. Did that turkey want to go there? Generally, when a turkey comes in, no matter what you sound like or what you call like, when he's ready to come, he's going to come. You know, I don't know. I just, maybe I have a different approach than people. You know, we'll get into kind of my strategies and what I would do. But I would say, like, if you were to go in the woods, get yourself a box call, something that you can easily run, a push button call, you know, a mouth call, something that you can be hands-free with, you know, maybe something to strike them at a distance, you know, like a box call and then a mouth call to finish something off. But, you know, I would say just be more of an observer than a caller at that point in time. When you get used to things and things are going your way, you can call. I mean, I got a buddy, my best buddy that I travel with. He's one of the best friction callers in the world, Brett Ledoux. He calls a ton, and I don't even call a quarter of what he calls. And I'm like, Brett, we probably could have killed that turkey if you didn't call, you know? So we'll go back and forth, but I personally say a box call, get a box call, get a mouth call, and just be an observer. Just be, you know, work on setup and how to move on a turkey and know when to move on a turkey and, you know, when not to, when to, and, you know, how to maneuver on a turkey. And I think those things are more important than actually calling to a wild turkey.
All right. So the listener, he's driving along in his truck right now and he's saying, what the hell, man? How do I figure that out? Like, how do I know when to do it? Like,
correct.
So like, I guess what tips would you have? Like I say, like starting out as a caller, like if they don't know when to call or they don't, you know, like they just, you got a guy that says, you know, I want to get out more. I got some public land around me. It's got turkeys. I didn't grow up turkey hunting. I don't really have a mentor. I'm just going to go and make some noise out there, you know,
make fire, make that box call start to smoke. Then you're going to hammer and bend that screw on that box call. You know, what I would say is what I would do, typical hunt situation is, you know, I'm going to get somewhere where I can, you know, you guys probably heard this 1,000 times, but I'm going to get somewhere where I can maneuver on a turkey, especially a public land gobbler. I'm going to look at, you know, where that turkey is. I'm going to say, if I'm on public land, I'm going to try to get to an area where, you know, every time Dick, Harry, and Fred have not come in at that turkey. So if there's an easy access, a parking spot where everybody is walking in at that turkey day after day after day, I'm going to probably look for something that's going to get around, come in at a different angle, get to where, you know, just something different than that turkey's used to every single day. And then once I'm in there and that turkey is gobbling in the tree, and I, you know, this is not roosting a turkey the night before. This is just driving down the road in the morning and I hear that turkey gobble, you know, and now I'm putting a game plan together how I'm going to kill that turkey. So I would come in and approach differently than everybody else, going in at a different angle. And then what I would do is I would try to get to as close to that turkey as possible. And I'm a guy now when it comes to getting close, I'm talking, I want to get close. you know, it depends. Now, if it's late in the year and there's a lot of leaves on the trees, I'm going to get close to that turkey. If there's not, you know, if it's early in the spring, I'm going to try to get close, but you got to be careful because you know, there's nothing to cover you. And then once I'm in there, I'm gonna sit down, and I'm probably gonna listen to what's going on in the woods. I'm not gonna get after that call right away. I'm not gonna call at all, to be honest. Probably more than likely not. I might scratch in the leaves a little bit, and until that turkey hits the ground, I may tree yelp a little bit, but I'm really not gonna get after that turkey at all until he hits the ground. And then once he gets the ground, I'm gonna get an idea of what's going on with the hens. Where are things located? And then I might try to get after him with that box call. I might call to him. And then I'm trying to just kind of evaluate the situation. Like, okay, I'm calling. He's gobbling to me. Or the hens are yelping back to me. I have some sort of interaction. Is he getting closer to me? Is he working away from me? Is he working left? Is he working right? Where is he going? And then from that point, I'm really reading that turkey's gobble. So if I call and he gobbles to me and he's not coming, right? He's just playing Mother Nature. He wants me to go to him, right? So we're trying to reverse that whole role. We're not trying to, you know, we're trying to get him to come to us, which is totally against Mother Nature, but it obviously happens all the time. So at that point, if I'm calling that turkey and he's gobbling back to me every single time, it's like, all right, we're playing a game, and we've all been there. Like, John and Adam, you probably call that turkey, just stands out there hammering, right? So you call, he gobbles. You call, he gobbles, right? Well, you know, I'd like to say, like, maybe I would shut up for a minute and see what happens. And then let him gobble on his own. Because now he's thinking, like, all right, my girlfriend was over there. Every time she calls, I'm going to gobble, but I'm not getting real close. So now I'm just going to shut up for a minute, and I'm going to wait, and I'm going to see what he does, and I'm going to see if he gobbles. And if he gobbles, now I kind of got him. And I'm going to wait a minute. I'm not going to call to him right away when he gobbles. And I'm going to see what happens again. I'm going to kind of read that gobble. So he gobbles again. Boom. Now, I'm going to wait one more time. And when he gobbles again, I'm going to cut him off. And basically what happened, the way I portray that in human nature is like, you know, Adam and John, think about this. You go to work one day and your colleague, one of your coworkers says, hey, Adam, you know, I really like that shirt on you. It makes your eyes look nice today. Or, hey, John, you know, I mean, your mustache is really on point today. It looks good. So what happened is you just changed that whole conversation. So instead of him giving you a compliment every single time when you called and he gobbles, now he gobbles and you're giving him a compliment. And we all know in the world of men, when men get a compliment, it's like, damn, I'm going to wear that shirt every day. And this stash is going to be on point. It's going to be on check. So I like to throw that out there and really get him excited and get him thinking about me and trying to throw that compliment to him. I'm trying to reverse those roles, you know, to get him more excited. And hopefully at that point, that might be that breaking point to, you know, get him to come to me. And if it doesn't, you know, then I'm just going back to the game plan. Maybe he's still got hands of him. Maybe he's working away. I'm going to try to circle way around him, trying to get ahead of him, always trying to get ahead of the game. So I guess being more of an active listener in the woods, you know, the calling part of things isn't going to screw you up in those situations. You know, situations I hear guys get into all the time is, you know, I sat by the tree, I didn't call like you said, and then I started calling, and the bird just kept going away, and I kept moving up on him, and he kept moving away from me, and I kept going, you know, kept going at him. Well, you know, at that point, you got to say to yourself, you got to circle around that situation and get to where he wants to be, and just maybe not call so much at that point in time until you get in a position around them and just try to keep closing that gap like a good old chess game. Right. So those are some situation, you know, some more situational stuff, but I really like to change that role of I like to give the compliment instead of me calling. I like to flip that around at some point in the game.
You ever give them the old, like, I don't know, the slingshot move like we do in elk hunting, but I know Frank used to set up and he would call and then like, yeah, that bird's, he's not really moving. And then he'd go back like 20, 30 yards, even 40 yards and call a little bit. And then that bird would be like, oh, now she's walking away. I'm going to go back over there and check her out. You ever
Yeah, and that works well when you know, when you obviously when you hunt with somebody,
right?
Because you can have somebody get up and walk, you know, walk away, or you know, you know those things are awesome. Get up, you know, walk 100 yards away, you know, call to them, and then come back, you know, and then come back in. Those are great situational things to do when you have a henned up gobbler. You know what I mean? It's I don't know if I like the word really henned up. I don't know if I believe in that philosophy so much. I think every gobbler is definitely killable, you know, just based upon situational type stuff. But yeah, those are all phenomenal tactics of what I would do on a normal turkey hunt.
So one of the things you said there is one of the things that first of all, John and I were chuckling because, you know, when you said you want to get real close, we set up last year, like underneath these turkeys, like.
Well, on accident. I put them to bed the night before and I told Adam, all right, I know they're like, I was showing them on our base map, like they're right over here. And then we start walking in and I'm like, I flip on my phone and I'm like, oh shit, we've walked too far. We're like, we're close to them. I'm close to where I think they're at anyway. It's not like I've seen where they were. And sure enough, we went back a little bit and they're right above us. They're gobbling.
How'd that make out?
Oh, they just flew down, went the other way.
Really?
Yeah. We didn't spook around because they were still gobbling and they flew down, but they just.
But that's one of the things that I want to talk about. Like when you're saying that, you know, and I think there's a level of patience and like confidence that you have to have turkey hunting. And especially when you can't see the birds and they're gobbling. But when you talk about not even calling until they hit the ground, like from that instance, like those turkeys stayed in the tree a lot longer than I expected them to. And where John killed his bird last year, you know, I've hunted there, deer hunted and seen the turkeys in the trees well after date. I mean, like when I would have expected them to be down. And so that's an interesting like thing to actually understand, like at what time do they fly down, especially based on temperature and other stuff like that. But I think one of the things that like everybody gets caught up in.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
And, I mean, Frank's been killing turkeys a long time, and he's probably, you know, the most seasoned and has the patience to do it. But I feel like everybody that I hunt with, and I fall victim to this myself, is that you love hearing them gobble. So it's like you call, they gobble, and then you're like, oh, if I just call again, they'll gobble again, you know, and you get.
I think sometimes that's a detriment to it because we've seen it right in the video a couple years ago when Adam had a shot at a bird and Frank was right behind the tent calling and he couldn't see the actual bird. There was another one gobbling like 50 yards past the one that actually came in. And so Frank's calling, and this bird comes in quiet and all of a sudden Adam's like, there he is on the side. You know, he points him out. He's right there on the edge of the field. Well, he come in completely silent.
Other than drumming.
Yeah. But he's walking across. Well, Frank didn't see him coming. So all of a sudden, Frank would start yelping. Yelp, yelp, and that bird would stop and he'd start strutting. And otherwise, he was just like, he was on a straight walk towards us. And then he'd start coming towards us. And then Frank would call again. Poof, he'd stop and start, you know, strutting and drumming. And he ended up coming into like 5 yards, but that's a whole nother story. But
so, I mean, how close, you know, like you said, call too much. You know, I have been fortunate in my life, in my 39 years of existence to really hunt with some amazing turkey hunters, you know, guys, some super slammers and, you know, guys who have, you know, shot the super slam and, you know, southern hunters and northern hunters and western hunters. I've really had the experience to hunt with, you know, a lot of phenomenal turkey hunters. And one thing I picked up on this is there's this guy by the name of Clay Johnson. He's a super slammer. He's from Mississippi. I was hunting this turkey one day, and I was probably in my 20s, and he came in and he killed this turkey. And I said, Clay, how did you kill that? How did you know? Like, you know, we set up and I was like, how did you kill that turkey? He said, TJ, he says, curiosity kills a cat. And I've hunted with guys ever since, and I hunted with guys that call a lot. I've hunted with guys that don't call a lot, you know, and I kind of take a mixed bag of those tricks, you know, because I don't like to say, oh, you don't call a lot, and you call a lot, and, you know, because I've seen it, you know, there's no right answer.
Right.
You know what I mean? You know, it's not like, you know, don't call or call or, you know, I think that's crazy. But when that happened and I saw that turkey die, I was like, God. And I've seen other turkeys that I know guys wouldn't kill because they called to them. And I think, John, you know, you're right on it. Like, I'm a turkey caller. I like to hear myself call, but I like to see a dead turkey.
Right.
You know, so ultimately it's all situational. But I think you can kill a lot more by being a patient and not, you know, like you said, Adam, like everybody goes turkey hunting because they want to hear that turkey gobble. And I love to hear that turkey gobble too. But you got to remember, like you said, drumming is a turkey noise. That turkey sometimes is going to come in just drumming. You know, he may not gobble. He might just drum and he come in. I killed a turkey in Mississippi one year that gobbled 200 yards out, 300 yards out, and then came the whole rest of the way drumming, and I killed him on the drum. You know, it is so situational. There is no real right or wrong thing. And, you know, I hate telling guys do exactly this. You know, I will say to most guys that I talk to, call and just learn from situations rather than calling too much. If you hit the right gobbler, no matter what you throw at him, he's going to come in.
Right.
You know what I mean? But public land hunters versus private land hunters, there's a difference right there. You know, guys that hunt birds that are pressured all week long, you know, I mean, they got to do things different. You know, they're going to do things differently, but you know, it's all situational and it's all based upon what you enjoy to do, your tactic. You know what I mean? What you like to do as a hunter. You enjoy, like I got a buddy that I hunt with, he loves to call. He loves to hear turkeys gobble. My buddy Brett, he kills turkeys. He kills a bunch of turkeys. You know, could he kill more possibly if he didn't call as much? My opinion, yes. But, you know, that's not how he wants to hunt, though. So, you know, I guess it's all what you want, what you envision, what you want for yourself. If you like to call, go call. If you don't like to call, don't call.
I think some guys... You know? And even I'm afraid of this, and it's like, I want to sound perfect, but I've heard birds in the woods that I was like, what the hell was that? And then here comes a hen walking by. I'm like, wow, man, I could call better than she can, you know? Like,
right. Yeah, and that's it. You know, that's why, you know, like, I got a hen out in my backyard right now. She's a hen, you know what I mean? They're all different, you know? You know, we can tell each one of our voices right now apart. You know, when you talk, I've never seen you, John, but I can tell your voice apart from Adam's. And, you know, that gobbler can tell his girlfriend's voice away from you, apart from yours.
Right.
You know, what I mean? When she's yelping, he knows that's her. You know, it's just, you know, it's different.
Right.
I think you're right, you know.
Well, and you talk about that, like, that learning experience. Like, I've been in, you know, a bunch of situations where I've called in hens and to listen to the hens just clucking and purring and whatever. But I think one of the most fun times is I got into a spitting match with this hen, this giant gobbler that my brother didn't shoot because we didn't grow up turkey hunting and he thought it was too far for this 3.5-inch 10 gauge at 40 yards.
Yep.
And I mean, just the biggest turkey that I've ever seen. But from the other way, I called in this hen that was just spitting. And I mean, I know if if that translated to English, he was saying some bad things to me. But I was just mimicking everything that she said, you know, that all the sounds that she was making, I was just making them right back. And that was an extremely good learning experience for me, because it was just, you know, you don't get to hear that like in real life that often, at least, you know, unless you have turkeys in your backyard, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that's it. I mean, that's a point, like you pointed out, that's a good situational point right there, right? You were calling to a gobbler, and you heard when this hen was cutting you off. You're like, all right, I'm just going to keep giving her right back to her. You know, next thing you know, it's like, man, she's getting closer. I'm going to keep calling to her. I mean, that's a situational strategy. You know, you just pissed her off, and now she's coming to investigate. And next thing you know, she's going to drag behind her boyfriend, who's going to follow her, and you're going to kill him. You know, I mean, that's just the way, that's situational type stuff, right? Or, you know, it could work out where, you know, you're going to call and she's going to go the other way, because maybe, she got rained on last night, and she's really not in the mood to get in a fight with another hen. You know, so that's a perfect example of being aware of the situation that's going on with turkey vocabulary. I like to listen to the flock that I'm working with, you know, and try to really hone in on what works with that flock. I've noticed, you know, just kind of random stuff here. With my turkey out back, my gobbler, he's a real grand gobbler, and my hen are real grand turkeys. I have noticed, no matter what turkey call that I pull out, any slate, box call, you name it, he'll gobble like a son of a gun at first, but then he'll settle down. Like he might keep gobbling, but what he really gobbles to is a really low slate call, you know, I got a Lonnie Sneed slate call that I use that's just really just soft. And then I have a tube call that I use. It's a 2-inch Osage tube call that I Jake Yelp on. He goes, anytime you slow it down to a Jake cadence, like, just like really slow, not henny, like, he hammers. I mean, non-stop hammers. So anytime it's like Jakey or like any Jake Yelpin stuff or slow cadence, he goes ballistic. And I've seen it work in the turkey woods. Like my buddy Chris Walls has a tube call, and I was like, Chris, I've never seen a turkey act like that. I mean, those turkeys lost their mind. And that's what it was. It was just Jake Yelpin. And then you throw in a gobble. And it doesn't need to be perfect. I suck on a tube call. But it's just different. It's slower. It's a slower cadence. You know, it's somewhat jakey. But even my turkey loses his mind on it. So I always have one of those.
So with that, for guys that are just starting out, like, can you go through, like, the different types of calls, and especially like with you being a friction guy, like the properties maybe of the different materials. So like crystal or aluminum, copper, actual slate or whatever, yeah. Like, and which would be a good like starter call. Cause some of them, I mean, like the cheapest one at Walmart, like for me is like the most difficult call in the world to use. Like those crystals or whatever, like that's not for me. But
yeah, so I would say that, you know, I call for, so John, I call for Matt Van Sice. So when I got into calling, I started making my own mouth calls, but I really and truly heart to hearts, I am a friction call guy. Like I love a box. I love anything that you can rub together to make sound. So I was like, I want to call for somebody. I want to call for the best. And Matt Van Sice is the best friction call champion. He's the number one friction call champion in the world. He's the best. He's the GOAT. So I call for him, and he sends me box calls and he sends me friction calls, and I will say, like you said, Adam, I think sometimes crystal calls and glass calls are hard for guys. Because the morning moisture will get on there. On that glass surface or that surface. And if you don't have a waterproof striker, it's gonna run not great for you. I don't think you can go wrong with any type of slate call. I personally prefer a green slate or a red slate, and then any type of, I believe, aluminum, anodized aluminum, any type of aluminum call. Ceramic is really popular right now. Those are what I would recommend to guys, either a green slate, red slate, ceramic, or any type of anodized aluminum, or like they call it, I think, rock aluminum, or basic aluminum call.
Okay.
I don't think you go wrong with any of those at all.
And what is the, I mean, what's the main differences in the materials? I mean, is there a different sound, a different like ease of use? Like what makes calls different?
Yeah. So for me, you know, a lot of the calls, so I might have, so for example, if I'm going to go hunting, I might have, let's say I have three pot calls that I'm going to bring that day. Okay. So one, you know, one surface is going to be crystal, one surface is going to be slate, and then one surface might be, you know, like aluminum or something else. The purpose of those calls, so a crystal call would be, you know, kind of, for me, I get cleaner yelps out of a crystal call, really, really good front ends, really good back ends, just real clean. And I can cut really well on them. So cutting sounds I can do, you know, on a crystal call. Slate call, a lot of soft calling, like a lot of, like, just like content, you know, turkey clucks, soft yelps, like comfortable yelps, like not like excited yelps, but just real soft type of stuff. A lot of purrs, a lot of beginners will like to just purr on a slate call. So, you know, I like slate call for that type of stuff. Ceramic, same thing. I mean, it's just the sound quality. But where I can really change the sound call is in the strikers that I'm using. So I might have three different pot calls, but I might have six different strikers. In the striker woods on them, you know, I get subtle differences in my turkey sound. Like, you know, I might, you know, one slate call, I could change a striker three times on it, and I'm going to get three different hens. You know, so that's kind of what I'm kind of doing. I just kind of want to act like a lot of turkeys, you know, or, you know, more than one turkey, basically. You know, I personally enjoy walking into a room full of girls rather than just one. So that's kind of what I like to portray as, like, hey, you know, there's a bigger, better party over here. So I wouldn't say, I mean, it's really more about, like you said, you know, you like crystal or you don't like crystal in glass per se. And I would say those are more difficult for the general guy to run. I would think most people probably gravitate towards a slate call, you know, of some sort. I think green slate, you know, green slate over glass, you know, copper, anything of that nature is just different. Some things are higher pitch. Some guys think that, you know, if I have anodized aluminum or rock aluminum or copper or any type of metal, a lot of guys just like the front end on that call. And it's really a higher pitch call, louder call, cuts through the wind more. I think guys just like that because of the versatility. I think a lot of guys are going to like waterproof strikers because of, you know, the whole morning condensation dew type thing is a problem for guys. You know, so I think more or less the woods of a striker that I use, you know, are more effective than the call surface itself, I would say.
Okay. Yeah. Like I said, I mean, you know, your average guy is either going to go to Walmart or Bass Pro and pick up something, you know, that's there and it's going to be based on price, or they're going to be, you know, on social media and somebody says, oh, this is a good call, or, you know, they're going to be looking at turkey calls and they're going to be get a targeted ad from somebody that's, this is the greatest turkey call ever.
Yeah.
But it may not be, well, like I said, depending on material or whatever, ease of use. And when you were talking about the condensation, we'll add into that sweat from having it on there, because that was what was happening with the turkeys right above us, and John's turkey calls going,
Yeah. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. It's so funny, right? It happens. And that's what happens to guys, you know? And, you know, with condensation, like on a slate call, you can take it lighter and burn it, you know, and burn it off. But when you got turkeys above your head, it's too late for that. You know what I mean? I can't move. You can't move. So slate call is the way to go. I think you're always going to get some sort of surface, you know, ceramic. But you're right. Anything that you can get, you know, most guys are going to go to Walmart and grab one, and that's fine. It's going to kill turkeys. Get yourself maybe a couple different strikers, a waterproof striker, and maybe some other type of wood striker that goes on there, like a, you know, the two-piece diamond wood that goes with it or something like that, and that should be more than plenty.
And so you were talking about, like, pre-YouTube, you were looking at books and stuff, and, you know, like, it's funny. I was talking about, like, through our Patreon and our Marco Polo group, you know, there's guys on there that are calling turkeys and calling elk and stuff like that. And I said, you know, back in the day, like my father-in-law, they'd be on the landline calling back and forth with, listen to this call, back and forth, and audio tapes. And of, I mean, John, even, I think you had some, right?
Oh, yeah, I had cassette tapes. And
really? I
drove all the guys I worked with nuts. I worked the third shift in a chemical plant, and I drove a high-low. And, oh, man, that's all I do all night long is just sit there and sit on my high-low and just, with my diaphragm calls. And like, God, when's turkey season over? I'm like, shouldn't even close yet.
It's December.
Right.
That's funny.
But as far as books and stuff, I mean, the only thing that always pops up is the what is it, 10th Legion book.
Yep.
That one. And so, like, what are, I mean, that seems like that's the go-to resource. So I got to say that you're familiar with it. What, I mean, is it like the holy grail of turkey hunting, or what's the story?
You know what, to be honest, I you know, I'm just kind of, I'm in my man cave right now. I'm looking at, you know, some of the books that I cut my teeth with. Some of them I hunted, I was actually able to hunt with this guy, Glenn Sapier, and Bill McAllister from New York. But he gave me a book. It's called Secrets of Turkey Prose. But, you know, that was kind of when I already got started. I hunted with him and he gave me the book. Really, the books that got me going are just the Wild Turkey. It's a complete hunter. And then there's the Advanced Wild Turkey. And I think I probably read those books probably 30 times each. I mean, at that point in the game. And then, you know, Turkey Hunting and Turkey Call magazine was like the holy grail that came out like once a month for a year. And I'd like read that magazine, you know, front and cover, and just, you know, just that way. You know, so those books, especially the Turkey Hunter book, I don't know, it's just the Wild Turkey Hunter. It's a hardcover book. I have it right here. It just has a big picture of a Merriam's. It says, expert advance locating and calling big birds and big gobblers. That's ultimately what I did. And just watch I had hundreds of hunting videos, like Primo's hunting videos, and just old school, you know, every series and every season that you could have, I had it, you know, and just watched them just over and over again, you know, I mean, and that's all I watch on YouTube now is, you know, Pinhoti Project and, you know, Hunting Public and just all sorts of stuff just to stay in the game and just like, you know, hey, I want to know what he did, you know, because like I said, I think hunting is a big part of I'm going to take a little bit from everybody that I am, and I'm going to become who I want to be. You know, so that's, you know, ultimately, and then failures, you know, there's nobody, like I think John said, nobody was turkey hunting, you know, nobody, you know, within the last 10 years, it's really exploded, you know, but you go back 20 years ago, I mean, or even 15, it was still, you know, like you turkey hunt, like you're fall turkey hunting. Like we're deer hunting. What are you doing? Fall turkey hunting. But the last 10 years, it's really just exploded, I would say would be a really good word for turkey hunters. But I would say 15 years ago, I mean, there was not a ton of turkey hunters. You know, there was a handful of guys turkey hunting. And then there was even a smaller portion of guys being really successful in killing turkeys all the time.
So is there a place that you would point people that wanted to like get better, or that, you know, that there's no replacement for experience, right? So,
yeah,
but correct. But if you're trying to do it, you know, one state, you know, on the weekends or whatever, like, that's why I was asking about the books and stuff like that. Are the books that much more beneficial, say, than to just watching it on YouTube, or do they each have their place? Or would you say that now in this day and age, you could get everything from YouTube that you could read in the books at that time?
Yeah, I think there's so many good stuff on YouTube right now that, you know, those books are kind of like, you know, ancient resources, right? Like, you know, the hunting public has phenomenal stuff on, you know, YouTube and just resources. And, you know, you got to remember there's a time, like, you know, also too, like, you know, John pointed this out, like, you know, people are just in flux everywhere. Like, I'm part of the NWTF and I, you know, I take people hunting. You know, I'm all about introducing the youth to hunting and, you know, being a proactive, you know, hunter. And then it's like, but wait a minute, now my hunting spots have all the people I took in it. And now there's just people everywhere. So it's like, but I think there's just so much good information on YouTube. Like I said, this guy called me, just sent me a message the other day. Hey, this is the Saratoga Strutters NWTF. My name is so-and-so. I'm looking to get into turkey hunting. Can you help me out, or someone mentor me? I called the guy up, and he referred to videos. He referred to, you know, the hunting public. He referred to things on YouTube. You know, I can only, you know, reference what I seen on YouTube. And I'll be honest, what he was saying was like, holy shit, dude, like, you're spot on, man. Like, you know, but, you know, when some of it's kind of far-fetched because he's hunting New York, and he's like, you know, I noticed like turkey habitat is, you know, primarily around like, you know, farm fields and stuff. And I'm like, well, you know, the public land that you're going to hunt is not going to have any fields on it. Like, you're going to be in big woods. You know what I mean? So you gotta know what you're looking for. You know, if you're going to get some private land, but area right around, you know, where we live in New York, most private land or public land that you hunt is going to be big woods, you know, 3,000 acres, no fields on it. You know, I mean, so when you're looking for that type of habitat on a public land around me, that's probably not going to, you know, that not going to happen. So then he took that stuff he learned and he's applying it. You know, I said, go visit that piece, drive there, you know, see if there's any turkeys. Think about what you learned on that video and put it to use, you know. And one of the first things he said, he goes, oh, you know, they said there was going to be a lot of habitat, you know, and turkeys are going to hang around a lot of habitat, but I didn't see any really habitat, you know. But, you know, he might have neglected to see the stream that was running, you know, a mile and a half back, you know, or the hard ridge knob that was back there, you know, or the giant oak collar that was back in there, you know, because he was looking for fields. You know, I want fields and I want to be able to see turkeys. And, you know, what do you mean you can hunt turkeys and, you know, you don't have to see them? You know, those are things that you just gotta, that's where the experience comes in, right?
Sure. And so on that experience thing, so you had mentioned earlier, what was it, the Super Slam? Is that what you're chasing right now?
Yeah, so I've hunted, now remember, please, I'm a school teacher, I am a working individual, I got a job Monday through Friday, and I get 5 personal days throughout the year. So I started the Grand Slam, I finished my Grand Slam. I really am interested in the Royal Slam, which is getting a goals turkey. So a Grand Slam is the Eastern, the Osceola, the Rio, and the Merriam's in the United States. To travel to get the Royal Slam, you have to go to either Mexico or draw a tag for the mountains in southern Arizona for a goulds. Really expensive. Don't really have interest at this time in my life to do that just because of price. And then to shoot the World Slam, you have to go to Mexico to shoot the oscillated. Again, I just don't have the time or the means to do that right now. So that's going to be on the back burner, and we'll hope. So I started this quest of this U.S. Super Slam, which is a state, you know, kill a turkey in every state of the U.S. So 49 states, because Alaska does not have turkeys. And I've started off on fire. So I was traveling, driving through the night, trying to get through things on the weekends, you know, getting out of work on a Friday, driving to where I need to be, being back on, like, you know, taking a Monday off and doing like three or four long weekends throughout turkey season. I got to 26 states or 25 states completed. And my son was born, my firstborn Chase. He is now 8. I am currently at 27 states completed now. And since he's 8 and he's a turkey hunter and he wants to kill turkeys, he's already killed 10 turkeys. He's 8 years old. It's just turn, man. It's all about him now. So now my passion is, you know, I'm going to put that on hold a little bit, my quest for the Super Slam, because it's really enjoyable to see my kid shoot a turkey. And he's just tore up with it. I mean, we're leaving to go to Kansas and South Dakota on spring break next week. So we're taking off Easter night, and we're hunting Kansas U season for 2 days, and then we're going up and hunting the Lakota Indian Reservation in South Dakota and Kyle. And hopefully he'll be able to shoot his first Merriams and his first Rio this year. But it's just awesome. And then we're coming to Michigan late season. We're gonna hit up a Michigan on May 22nd. So we're gonna get out that way, and I'm gonna bring them. So my turkey killing's really coming to a slow stop, but his is catching fire. Yeah,
that's awesome.
So yeah, so the Super Slam, you know, I mean, I'd like to complete by the time I'm 55, but you know, with him around, I don't think it's possible right at this point in my life. So we'll keep knocking it out and going from there. Like, Michigan this year will be a new state. So my new states this year are going to be Michigan. I'm going to try to kill in New Jersey. I'm going to try to finish up Massachusetts and possibly a Pennsylvania. So those would be 4 new ones, which will get me, you know, we'll break the 30 mark this year, which will be huge. I'll have, you know, like 19 left, and you know, that starts to be manageable.
Sure. So on those, like, I mean, I can't even imagine how many turkeys you've killed to even have killed them in that many states already. But let's talk about like one memorable hunt, or like maybe a tough bird to kill, or one that you're the most proud of, or something like that. Have you got a story for us on something like that?
I'll have 2 stories for you. So Mississippi was probably, I hunted with my buddy Joseph Deere down there, who's a big turkey hunter, Grand Slam, World Slam. You know, he shot them all. We hunted, you know, some state forest land down there, bordered some state forest land. And the first year I went down there, I struck out. I had a bird come in first day, first hour, like midday around 1 o'clock. A bird came in about 55, 60 yards, and it was like just TSS, just started to come to life, but I hadn't shot it. It was in my gun, it was loaded in my Mossberg 935, and I let this bird pass because I was like, first day, I'm not gonna shoot a bird at 55 yards, 60 yards first day. So I let him pass, and nothing. I had 2 more days to hunt, and I did not kill a dang turkey. So I had to go back there. And that second year I went back, it was just fire. I killed, you know, I was there for 3 days. I killed 2 turkeys, and I watched my buddy Joe kill a turkey. And that was just, it was just awesome. I mean, there are places it's tough. You can't control things like weather. Those are places that you have to go back. You know, some successful stuff, like just to stay with it, right? Like real life experiences, stay with it until, you know, the fat lady sings, they say, right? Like, there are some moments where I was hunting Illinois, Iowa, and Missouri. In 4 days, we had to do it. So we did Illinois, banged out Illinois, my buddy and I, first morning, boom, Illinois is done. Moving on to Iowa. spent 2 days in Iowa, killed a turkey in Iowa. We had 1 day left and moving on to Missouri. So got to Missouri, hunted, I think it was a 5 day trip. I think I had 2 days in Missouri. Day number one struck out, nothing really going on. Day number two, it was like the morning hunt, nothing was really going. And then like, I guess there was a big rainstorm came through and my buddy and I went to breakfast. I'm like, man, this has just been an awesome trip. We killed, you know, a bunch of turkeys in a couple days and I've knocked out two out of the three states. So we're just for shits and giggles. He's like, let's go try some state, you know, let's just go try some state land right around the corner here. And I'm like, Joe, so we see this giant gobbler cross the road in front of us. I mean, giant gobbler. And it was on private property. And I said, God, man, it's on private property. Now, hunting season in Missouri ends at 1 o'clock. And it's like 12 o'clock. It's noon. And we got an hour left and that's it. Game over for that spring, you know, for that turkey tour. And isn't this right across the street from where this gobbler's pulling out on this farm back road? Isn't there an F-350 pulling down the driveway? Well, this little pretty little thing, she had to be in her 20s. She comes down the driveway and stops. And I went up to the car. I went up to the truck and I said, ma'am, I said, you wouldn't happen to know who owns this property, would you? I said, I'm from New York. I'm a turkey hunter. Trying to shoot, you know, my super slam, and I have literally 1 hour left in Missouri, and I'm kind of done. She goes, well, that land right there is my daddy's land. I said, oh, God. I said, she goes, my daddy's home. You can go right up to the house and ask to talk to him. So I went up there, and he was the nicest man. He goes, I tell you what. He goes, you got an hour to kill that turkey, and then the season's over, and you got to go home anyways. He goes, what the hell? He goes, try it for an hour. So there was a drainage ditch that like kind of was like carved out, and I ran down the drainage ditch to try to get in, and doesn't this gobbler, isn't he coming? Along, there's a pinch point between the drainage ditch and a pond, and this gobbler's just funneling here by the grace of God. And I end up shooting him. It was like 12:30 when I killed him, and I went back up there, and it was just one of those things where, you know, you think you're out of the game, and then it's just like, man, your luck just changes in the last second, you know. So never think you're out of the game. You know, I had a buddy just text me in Florida. He's like, dude, it's crickets. There's nothing down here. I'm like, man, just stay after it. I said, you got a day left. Just haul hard. He sends me a picture today of a dead gobbler. You know, it's just those things, just, you know, you can never give up. You know, it's just like life, right? I mean, just stay with it till the end and good things will happen.
John's chuckling. You got to be thinking about your trip out west this year.
What, do you have a deer trip out there?
Oh, man. I had a three-week – I was out in Montana for 3 weeks chasing antelope, elk, and mule deer. So I only came home with a mule deer. So, yeah, it was a lot tough. Of fun, but it was tough. Should have killed a big elk and just didn't capitalize on it.
But I had the same thing with the – with the farmer on the land. John's got all this crap laid out. And
it was the very first day I got out, and I was in eastern Montana, and I just picked a spot on the map, like BLM, and I chased these freaking, end up finding some whole herd of them and had a shot. It just didn't work out. And I got back to the truck and it was like, shit, almost 8 hours after I'd left, no water, nothing in the heat. And I was pretty much just like, I was laying next to my truck in my chair, like sprawled out with just I had no shirt on. My pants were pulled all the way up. They looked like, you know, some hillbilly shorts. And here comes this dude in the truck, and we wave, you know, at each other, and he goes over the cattle grade onto the private, and he backs up. Well, there was a herd of antelope right there, and he backs up. He's like, hey, you hunting antelope? I'm like, yep. He's like, well, I own this section and this one right here. You can kill all you want. Fill your tags. I'm like, oh. Just awesome dude, you know. Just yeah. But I was wiped out at that point. I ended up chasing him that afternoon, but then I had to head west to hook up with my buddy for the elk. But
that's awesome.
But, yeah, cool, nice people.
It's funny how things worked out, and you know, that's the best part about doing that is you get to meet, you truly get to meet, you know, I mean, just through this, I met you two guys, you know, through turkey hunting.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I have met some of the best people on that walk this planet through doing what I love to do. And it's just, it's awesome, man. I mean, it's just a great experience. You know, people like you said, Montana, that just, you know, willing to give you, hey, there, you know, just go do whatever you want. There's a bunch of ammo over there.
Right.
You know,
yeah, he's like, even go up by the house. He's like, up by my house up there, the creek. They love to hang out up there too.
Like, yeah.
But, so one question it's I always crazy. Ask is what's your bow setup, but do you bow hunt turkeys also or just gun?
So I do. So I traveled one time, John, to bow hunt turkeys. I went to Kansas where I'm bringing my son this year. And actually it's funny cause you asked me, cause I'm going back with a crossbow this year. But I do bow hunt turkeys now. And as the first time I ever traveled, cause I thought I wanted to shoot my grand slam with a bow. And I had plenty of opportunities. I had no idea what went on, but I missed 4 or 5 shots with my bow at turkeys that were literally 10 yards, 15 yards. I mean, just give me shots. But I'm out in the middle. I forgot my tent stakes. The wind's blowing. My blind's rocking back and forth, so I'm spread eagle in the middle of the blind. You can only imagine what it looks like. I'm trying to hold the ground blind down, draw my bow, and I'm slinging arrows at this turkey, and this thing's just standing there. I'm like, oh, my God. But I enjoy it, but I'll be honest. I do not like them to flop. I don't like them to run away. I get freaked out. So I'm not like a giant bow hunter. My preferred setup right now at this current time is the turkey guillotine setup.
Yep.
I really enjoy that. I've shot a bunch of turkeys with a bow in the fall. I enjoy hunting, you know, fall turkeys with a bow. I shot a cool bearded hen on tape once with a bow and arrow, but I have a Bowtech equalizer that I shoot, and I just shoot the the 2-inch Rage hypodermics or, you know, whatever at turkeys, and, you know, have success. But I prefer a gun, my man. I'm not gonna lie to you. I don't like to watch them go away.
Right.
It gives me really bad anxiety. But well, so yeah.
Cool deal.
Fun stuff, man.
I suck at it. I've I've blown so many chances at turkeys with the bow that
but he's blown so many chances at turkeys with a bow that now he's going to go after him with a trad bow.
Because
I thought that's what you said, you're going to go after him with some sort of bow this spring or something, right?
Oh yeah. So we've been, how long have we been just strictly bow hunting turkeys? Like
4 years.
It's been like 4 or 5. Oh, it's got to be 5 years, I think, because it was before we even started the podcast when I shot the one without telling you.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think I've shot at 5 or 6 turkeys now, and I've yet to bring one home. And what, like, the one was like 5 yards.
Smoked like, the decoy. Really?
Shot the decoy.
Freaking ten ring the decoy.
Steve, I have a buddy, Steve Brown from Mississippi. This man is just, he is, that's all he does is kill turkeys with a bow. And I believe last year, he killed his 130th turkey with a recurve.
Holy.
Yeah, this guy is an assassin. And I just saw the other day, today on Facebook, my buddy Sandy Brady from North Carolina there. I don't know if you guys ever heard of him or not. But he hunts turkeys with a sling bow. And he just killed, he killed his second Osceola with a sling bow. And I was like, man, that is cool.
Yeah, I just figure, and I've been shooting the longbow really well. Not to say that I wasn't shooting my regular bow very well, so I don't know what that even matters. Just that I can hit what I'm aiming at with it. But it's like, if I'm going to screw it up, I might as well screw it up big time. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's going to be super fun and interesting anyway. Because the thing is freaking 62 inches long, so just trying to tote it around. Wow. Not, but
you got to have a tall ground blinder.
We're going to have a teepee for this one.
Yeah, you got to go old school for that. Oh, man.
We'll just cut the top out of our tent.
You like the Flintstone mobile. Right.
That was me last year.
That's awesome, man.
I think Adam put a video. After we had set up on that bird up in the roost, I was like, screw this, let's move. So I jumped in I just stayed in the tent. And of course, it was the COVID. So Adam had been sitting outside anyway. And I just grabbed it and started, you know, sneaking through. And I'm looking out, and all you can see is my feet.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, we have a lot of fun, but, you know,
we don't take ourselves about, too man.
Seriously.
No,
you can't do that. You know, that's part of the fun, too, is being able to turkey hunt with people. And, you know, I always have someone with me. I very rarely, like before school, I'll sneak in. Like when I want to kill a turkey, I'll kill my turkeys before school and then I'll jump right there. But most of the time on weekends, I'm taking people or taking kids or just, you know, it's just fun to hunt with people. It's, you know, like you said, it's that fun part. You know, that guy Todd, I don't know, you talked to Todd there about deer hunting a little bit. I took him on an awesome Adirondack turkey hunt last spring that was just insane. And we got a hen fired up too, but it's just good going with people and meeting people.
So like, I know you said you didn't want to do like a whole lot of self promotion or anything, but like, where can people follow along, or if they want to check out your calls or anything, you know, where can people like check out your stuff?
Yeah, you can check out my stuff, you know, Facebook, you can follow me, TJ Jordan, Dirt Nap Calls. On I have a website, Dirt Nap Turkey Calls, I have it's like a turkey call website, and that's probably, you know, the best place to get a hold of me. And feel free to contact me about any turkey information you may have or however I can assist you.
And so I guess for your calls, like, do you have, like, for mouth calls and stuff, would you recommend, do you have, like, a beginner mouth call or anything where you would point guys who, you know, wanted to support call turkeys?
Yeah, you're right. It's a really complicated process, and that's probably a whole nother podcast, to be honest. But, the gist of it is guys who want to learn to call a mouth call, they really need to spend some time in front of the mirror and figure out where they call out of their mouth. Do they blow out of the center? Do they blow out of the left? Or do they blow out of the right? So naturally, when you start to huff, you know, air out of your diaphragm to call a turkey, you know, your tongue or your mouth is going to want to gravitate to one side or the other. So you're either going to be a center mass blower right out of the center of your mouth, or you're going to blow left or you're going to blow right. When you figure that out, those are the calls that I'd want to target at that point. I do make a call it's called the Phenom. That is probably one of my number one selling calls. You know, it's a 4,000th read over, you know, a 3,000th over a piece of proof. So it's just under, you know, 10,000ths total thickness, which is, it's pretty thin, to be honest with you. And it's not stretched terribly tight. My feedback on it is it's really easy blowing. You know, guys can purr on it, guys can cut on it, guys can yelp on it. They get loud, they get soft. That's probably one of my fan favorites. The other one is a Serpentine that I sell. It's a 3,000th over two pieces of probe, so it's very, you know, it kind of looks like a snake tongue kind of in the center. It's more meant for, you know, kind of like guys that aren't sure where they blow out of, but a guy just wants to blow a good turkey call because it's caught left and right. And that Phenon, that first one I talked about, was more of a, you know, center mass, you know, right over the center of the call, because it's a split V basically. It's a modified split V. So it's a V with a corners cut off of it. It's good stuff, but, you know, you can look at anything on my website, or I can custom make anything. You know, I had a guy show up to that today at the house, and I made him a three-read ghost cut out of all prophylactic. You know, I don't sell it, but, you know, he wanted to try something different, and, you know, I spent some time with him, and we just figured that's kind of what he's going to blow the best. So, you know, I can custom make stuff, or, you know, just the easiest way, shoot me a message and we can talk about what would work the best for you.
Well, awesome, man. I appreciate it. And it's a great conversation. And, like I said, I think it's going to help people, like, kind of getting started on, like, basically, you know, I guess to build their confidence and to say, you don't need to be great. You know, you just need to get out.
Yeah.
There
and
do
I think you're right. I mean, I think there is a lot of confidence, you know, you kind of touched on that. Like there's a side, like, how close do I get? How close do I not get? Like, you know, there's times where I'm like, man, I'm getting, you know, guys freak out when I tell them, like, you know, I think John said you roosted some turkeys and, you know, you didn't know where they are. Now, field birds, if I roost a turkey and a field bird, like, because I've seen it and I've done it, I'll literally take that ground blind. If there's a bird on the edge of the woods in the field and I watched him fly up the night before and I know where he went to and I think he's going to pitch down, you know, I'll put a ground blind in the center of the field the morning before. I'll pop it up there and I'll be looking at that turkey and roost, you know, and when I tell that to guys, most guys are deer hunters and they're like, wait a minute here. You popped a ground blind up in the morning. And this turkey's gonna see this ground blind in the field. He's gonna come down to it, you know. Like when I'm taking my son, you know, youth hunting, because sometimes he's so young, we need a ground blind, you know, field situations around here. But they're like, yeah, you literally put a ground blind in front of that turkey, looking at that turkey in the woods about 50 to a 75 yards off that, you know, maybe 100 off that wood line, because you don't want him, you know, I don't want him to ever fly over my ground blind. And then it comes into, like, you know, I was remember hunting a distinct hunt. I was hunting in Pennsylvania with my buddy Job, and we were hunting during youth season. So he had his nephew Seth with him, and I had my son Chase. And we watched these turkeys fly up the night before. They were on the side of a mountain road, literally roosting above the road. And we got looking at this apple orchard field that went up to the mountain. I mean, it's big, giant, you know, probably 300-acre field. That was just huge. So I got looking at the contour. It's almost like looking at a landing strip in an airport. I'm like, Joe, these turkeys are above us. They're going to pitch out of here and they're going to land right here. So we set a ground blind up right there. And this turkey pitches down and comes out of the tree and land, boom, right next to the ground blind. My son shoots that one at 8 yards. And mind you, we set it up that morning. My son shoots that one at 8 yards and another one pitches down and comes right to the decoy. And we ended up doubling that morning with youth. And I guess just be confident and try things that, like you said, like, what's too close? You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, and if it's close enough and you booger them, so what? There's other turkeys. You know, I mean, you figure it out. You can get close. But you know, those are confidence things that I guess – when I tell that story to guys that you can set a ground blind up and look at a turkey in a field, they look at me like I've never done it, and you're crazy. It's just nuts. I can't even tell you how many times I've learned that, but I've done that, killed turkeys. But
that's what I was gonna say right there. That's learning experience. When you, even if you screw it up, you learn something. You know.
Yeah, that's it. That's, I mean,
that's knowledge that you're gonna put in the bank for later.
Yeah, that's it. You know, and guys are like, yeah, just try it, man. One time, put that ground blind. You got to get in there early. You know, if you're not set up before, you know, you guys are about the same latitude as we are. So it gets sun up as, you know, we start killing turkeys in late spring at 5:15, you know, is legal killing time. So, you know, you got to be there and set up by 4 o'clock. I mean, if you're any later and that ground blind is not set up by 4 o'clock, like you said, when those turkeys went under you, you know, you weren't expecting those turkeys to be above you. And now if you were going to sit there right underneath them, those turkeys more than likely heard you.
Oh yeah.
You know, walking around, because you weren't expecting them to be right above your head. Now, if you were going to go, if you knew they were in those trees and you went in there an hour earlier and you sat down, those turkeys probably would have flew down. You would have killed them. You know what I mean? But just because you walked in, you know, in there and they knew something wasn't right, and it was probably, you know, not too far between that, you know, that magic hour there, then, you know, that, you know, those, that's all learning experience stuff. But I've sat right under turkeys that, you know, just getting in early because I know they're there. I know, you know, Dave Owens does it, you know, he likes to be off them, but, guys just, I don't think they know how close you can get. And I think guys would be, if I took a video of how close is close, they'd be like, holy shit, this is close.
Oh, yeah.
So, well, cool, fellas. I truly appreciate it. It's been fun, and hopefully somebody learned something from it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And like I said, I just appreciate it, and we'll have to catch up after our season, or when you come to Michigan, definitely get a hold of me, and we'll see if you can't, you know, make the most of your time. We'll tell you where there's some birds that are, you know, unkillable birds. We'll give you
that's
a
it.
Challenge.
That's what we like.
So, awesome, man. Well, I appreciate it.
Thanks, Adam. I appreciate it, fellas. You guys have a good one.
Yep. Yeah, you too.
All right.
Mondays with Into the Blue, brought to you by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.
I'm Will Cooper, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from Hunt Stand Presents anywhere, anytime, and on any device.